Hello and welcome to the Known and Ever podcast, where we have an action-packed week. We've got a double bonus Premier League fixtures, we've got some injury drama, and we've got an FA Cup draw. Joining me this week is regular panellist James Bird, as ever, and we're also joined by guest panellist Daniel Bentley. Gentlemen, good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello. We've got lots to talk about this week, so I'm just going to jump straight in there. Before we sort of dissect the games on a more detailed basis, I just want to get both of your views from, I guess, where you feel at the end of last week. The Clarets were faced with two very tricky away games, actually, away on Bournemouth on Tuesday night and then away at Leicester at the King Power on Saturday. Two fixtures last season, which would have left us cowering in horror at this time of the year with our away form. But ones where we felt kind of positive going into this week. We expected them to be tricky, but we also expected the Clarets to come out quite well. As a result, we won at Bournemouth quite comfortably in the end. And even though we did succumb to a loss away at Leicester, the Clarets did put in certainly a very good first half performance. James, I'll start with you. How do you feel at the end of that week? What's your thoughts?
It seems a little strange to say, but almost slightly disappointed. You know, as you said, we played quite well over the two games, and really to come away with only 3 points out of the two feels like a poor return on our efforts. I thought Leicester, we definitely deserved something out of the game, and if it wasn't for that one sort of early lapse, I think we would have got it. And it's strange to say at this stage, when you think about last season's away form, that you could possibly be saying that that there's maybe a little hint of disappointment after two games like that. But I think, you know, not pushing on from the work we did at Bournemouth and not taking advantage of how good we looked at Leicester, just leaves you feeling just not quite as excited about us as you did beforehand. But still, three good points on the road, which I think you've got to take into account coming into this time of year.
Yeah, I think I would probably agree with that. Daniel, where's your thoughts? Do you think that 3 points out of six was good enough? Do you think that's above expectations as we are in the league? What's your thoughts after that week?
I have the same basic thoughts as James, but I'm not as pessimistic. I'm not as down about it. I think I don't think you learned a lot about Burnley this week. I think you know you've got two away games, great performance at Bournemouth, and you know a disappointment at Leicester, but still a better away performance than most games we had last season, save for dodgy goalkeeping or not, which I'm sure we'll get to, and a couple of chances that we just didn't take. We could have got a point or a win out of that. So the basic performance was there. The result wasn't, and that's gonna happen in the Premier League. I'm not too down about it. I think over the course of the season, these things balance themselves out. You're gonna get games like that. But then we had a fantastic game at Bournemouth, so. I'm happy with this week. It could be a business to get 3 points any week in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. You've got to look at these games, haven't you, and think that, I guess, the blueprint for Premier League a season, I guess, is to try and win all your home games, and any points you get away from home are a bonus because everybody's fighting for those home points because away points are so rare. So to actually take three from six is a pretty decent return. I'm going to stick with the Bournemouth game then first, given that that was the first one in the fixture list and the one that we won at. James, it was a really clinical performance, I thought, and two very good goals. I was particularly impressed with the passing game. I think that our midfielders were playing a very, very classy game in midfield. And a lot of the feedback from the game was that the Burnley boys were just showing some really, really entertaining football. Are we finally shaking off that long ball direct tag, and can we now be seen as a side that actually plays some really attractive football in this league?
I think it's funny you say that, because after the game, I believe Josh King said that Burnley were really a really clear long ball side. So I think the reputation still sticks, but there's been two games in a row there with Arsenal and Bournemouth where I think we were anything but a long ball side. The first half against Arsenal, as we said last week, I think some of the passive move on Shaw was exquisite. And we saw the same again against Bournemouth, that first goal. Some great movement in there. And yes, it's a more direct method of putting it, that, you know, the passes aren't 5 yarders all the way from our keeper to their area. But there's just some lovely touches in there. The one from Brady back to Cork, and then, the pass across the penalty area. So it's a goal from 6 yards at the end of the day, and that's not something you can do, is just strictly a long ball team, because obviously you'd be caught offside almost at every time. So to still be stuck with a tag, I think it's just a bit. See, I'm not one of the team, so I'm not quite insulted. But I'd say I'd imagine as one of the players, it's quite insulting to have that tag attached to us because it's just not how we play at all. You know, we like to play to feet and we like to play simple passing, and it just doesn't seem to be reflecting in our reputation at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't think it helps either that we had the managerial merry-go-round that we've just been through, and that the persistent talk about Sean Dyche to Burnley and to Everton. Sean Dyche is already at Burnley, I would like to clarify that. All the rumours all the time of Dyche going to Everton, and we had some quite high-profile analysis, didn't we, that Dyche would never be considered for one of these big clubs because he plays direct long ball football. So that's probably not helping. Daniel, going sort of before we turned to the goals and the classy play, we were hit a little bit before the game started with an injury blow to Matt Lawton, who didn't make the game and instead was replaced by Bardsley, who made his debut for the Claretts, certainly starting debut. Now, that's the first time this season that defence has been broken up that way, certainly the back four. Were you impressed? Were you concerned? Or, you know, do you think that now we've just got such good cover in that defence that it doesn't really matter who goes and comes, we can pretty much ride it out?
Yeah. Bardsley just slotted in and it was, you know, a very good performance at fullback, slide into the team, and maybe didn't give us the attacking edge that Lawton does, but did a great job defending. It reminded me, the situation anyway, of there was a recent New York Times article on Burnley and how we defend and how we defend as a unit. And, you know, it's two banks of four. It's the most no-nonsense type of defending, but we do it extremely well. And I think on the training ground, we practice defending drills, which not a lot of teams actually do. It's a lot more attack-minded on the training ground, but we do these defensive drills a lot, according to this story anyway. And it shows that, you know, even the next man up is ready to slot into the system, knows what his job is, and knows what everyone around him is going to be doing. And you just look at defending, you look at every time, you know, the opposition's on the attack. You know, even with the Leicester goal, we can wait for that, but we're still in two banks of four. We're still very organized. It was a sneaky ball to get past us, but this is a very, very well organized defense, and it makes the job easy if you're Bardsley and you come in and it's not unsettling. Obviously, we want Matt Lawton back as soon as possible, but job well done.
Yeah, I quite like the fact that actually we very much adopt the Sean Dyche mantra on the None and Ever podcast, in that we're all big Matt Lawton fans here and we're all very much championing his praises. And Daniel Bentley slides in and just adopts, as cover for obviously this week, and then just adopts the None and Ever approach of championing Matt Lawton. You see, it's just seamless. We just like to follow his style. But yeah, no, I agree with you with that, Daniel. I think we always worry a little bit, don't we, because our defence is so, so solid, and because it is well known and well drilled, like you say, that just the slightest disruption to that is going to set a whole chain reaction of doom coming along. But we've seen it this season. Nick Pope came in and has done a fantastic job as cover for Tom Heaton, and now Bardsley's slotted in. We've also seen as well in cup games, Charlie Taylor's done a great job at right back as well. So I'm feeling really confident with our defence, and I think, like you say, it's not just the quality of squad players that can come in and play that defence. It's just that just relentless training and development and discipline that Dyche is slotting into his side. James, I think one of the final points are on the Bournemouth game. I think it's one of those where I could probably talk about the Bournemouth game all night, just because I thought it was a brilliant display from Burnley. I thought it was entertaining, it was clinical, and it was just a great 3 points. But I do want to move on to Leicester just to have a look at that next. But James, we did have that sort of nervous last 10 minutes of a game again when Bournemouth managed to pull one back, and we all had that sinking feeling that we might end up defending too deep and inviting an equaliser and really gift Bournemouth an equaliser that they just did not deserve. But the Claretts really managed to keep them out and to maintain the 3 points. I've been worried a little bit recently about Burnley's, and we did this against Arsenal, but Burnley's perhaps, I don't know if it's nervousness or whether it's just a tactic of just defending very, very deep in the last minute of last 10 minutes of a game and really inviting a lot of pressure, not perhaps clearing the lines as well as they were going to do. But they seem to recover from that, the Arsenal game away at Bournemouth, and they seem to actually see out the game quite comfortably. And in the end, it didn't really feel like Bournemouth were going to get that equaliser. Do you think we are? I think this is another thing where we can add to Burnley, maybe learning the lessons from last season and even learning the lessons from previous games this season and actually knowing how to be disciplined for the full 93, 95 minutes and seeing games out.
I think we've been seeing it all season, really. I think a big mark of last season was those late goals we were conceding in both halves of the game, not just at the end of the game, but both halves. I think we seemed to almost get to injury time and suddenly start inviting pressure onto us. And it was one that probably cost us quite a few results, you know, particularly defeats that we could have had draws from. And in comparison, I think we've seen it very little this season. I think there's only really the Arsenal game where I felt we almost slipped back into that old way of inviting a lot of pressure late on. And obviously, ultimately, that did cost us when we conceded the penalty. But for the most part, we seem to have really learnt from that in the past. And we've done a much better job of trying to keep hold of the ball when we go to clear it, because that's a big part of it. A big part of it is just the way we kind of clear it, and we've got so many men back that the other team just get the opportunity to collect the ball and go again. But we've clearly learned from that, and to only concede one from that late pressure at Bournemouth, I think showed that our defence has been exceptional this season, and particularly when you consider that obviously it was only three quarters of the usual defence. So to see Bardsley come into the side and it not really make a difference to the way we defend, I think was extremely positive, because, you know, while I'm sure Lawton will come straight back into the side when he's available, it's nice to know you've got people waiting in the wings who can slot in and not miss a beat. And I think that's really important for us, particularly as, you know, the season drags on and there's going to be suspensions and there's going to be further injuries. We really need to see people capable of doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Daniel, is there anything that you sort of felt that we were lacking in the Bournemouth game, or just, I guess, as a summary, were you happy with the performance? Do you share the general view that it was a very classy performance by the Claretts?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the best away performances we've had this season. There's not really a lot you can complain about there. I think to your point about, you know, inviting pressure in the last 10 minutes, I think that's maybe just a result of how many times we've been up 1-0 in games and won and seen out. And I think anytime you're winning 1-0, or even if it's a tied game, your opponent is going to, you know, throw everything in the kitchen sink at you, and you are going to be on the back foot. I think that's just the natural flow of the game. But we've shown that we can sort of, we can definitely weather those periods. I don't feel as nervous when we're defending that deep as in past seasons, just because it's I will refer to this New York Times article again. I encourage everyone to read it if they haven't already, but it breaks down statistically how we defend, and we invite actually a quite high number of shots, but they're extremely low percentage shots. And I think that showed. I think, you know, we can defend deep, and teams might get a shot off, but very, very rarely are they good solid chances. Based on how quiet Nick Pope has been kept over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. We'll make sure we put a link to that New York Times article in the show notes so listeners can look at that quite easily. So let's move away from the Bournemouth game and let's have a look at this weekend's game. Again, a second away fixture this week away at Leicester. Not traditionally a happy hunting ground for the Claretts, and we always knew going into this game that it would be a very tricky game. I think the King Power's a tough place to go and play. I think Leicester are a very good side, you know, apart from a couple of losses. You know, this is a side that a couple of years ago won the Premier League, and despite all of the stars aligning for that season for them, you know, it does still take a lot to win that league over the course of a season. So I knew that this was going to be a tough fixture. And as it turned out, it was, and it was a one goal loss to Burnley, a really disappointing goal to concede in the very early stages of that game. Despite the Claret's best efforts, and certainly, again, I thought another very good performance in the first half especially, we just couldn't find that goal to bring us back level or get anything out of the game. So, Daniel, I'm going to stick with you with this Leicester game. I think in terms of the Leicester goal, I think how disappointed is it for us, A, as a defence as a whole, and for Nick Pope individually?
As a defence, like I said, the team actually is in, if you watch the goal on replay, they're in a completely tight bank, two banks of four, and they're all, every single defender is in the right position. The cross that comes in is just one of those where it's so scabby. It just nicks in between every player and it catches Pope a bit off guard, and he parries it away, and he parries it into Gray's path, and Gray just comes in at full pelt and whacks it in and whacks himself in the process. But there's, I mean, other than Pope could have, you know, parried it away from the oncoming attacker, actually defensively it wasn't that bad. We did struggle to get the ball out. We had a couple of chances to clear it that weren't, they didn't find a man on the end, and we didn't really regain possession. They managed to hold on for possession far too long. But, you know, in terms of shape, it was just one of those goals where they just beat us with a cross that was just very, very sly and got through. It's any goal you concede is disappointing, but that's just one of those ones that they scored against you, and you hope that your team can come back with a bit of attacking threat and deal them some damage on the other end. And unfortunately, that just wasn't to be in this game. We had a couple of chances. What are a couple of chances? Tarks did. Just one of those games where a pretty decent performance by Kasper Schmeichel just kept us out of it.
Yeah, it is disappointing. It's like you say, to be on the back foot so early. I think my initial view, and again, this is credit to how good the cross was. When I first saw the goal, I kind of questioned, I guess, both me and Tarkowski. Maybe Tarkowski, I felt when I first saw it, I thought, oh, is he daydreaming a little bit there? Has he been caught out? But when you watch it over and over again, you realise that, yeah, Daniel, you're quite right, that the defenders are in such a great position. They're doing exactly what they've been told to do and exactly what they do week in, week out. But they've just been caught by, just like you say, one of those crosses. James, that obviously left us on the back foot from very early in that game. And we have talked on the podcast before about the Burnley blueprint for games, especially this current side, of getting ahead in the game and then defending that lead for their lives. And that's made us very, very difficult to beat. On the flip side of that, I'm not entirely convinced yet that we have nailed our ability to be able to counteract that. So when we go behind in a game, how do we find a way through a defence and a side that's going to do exactly the same thing to us? Let's take Saturday in the Leicester game. I thought the Clarets in the first half were fantastic, and really Leicester didn't have any of the chances in that first half. They looked, you know, they were very much on the back foot all the way through the game. The Clarets were pushing and pushing and creating some really good football, but we just couldn't find that goal. So how do we get into these games when we go a goal behind?
That's an interesting question. I think what we did, I don't think you can really fault the way we played. You know, we've created chances, we've not taken them. And I think it comes back to actually on the most part this season, we've not really scored a lot of goals. Obviously, we've won a lot, but we've won a lot of games by one goal margins. And you know, when you go behind early, even one goal is only going to get you a draw back. And when you played the way we did on Saturday, I really thought we could have easily got all 3 points if we'd been able to finish our opportunities. And I think it just comes down to improving our general play and looking to get ourselves into better goal scoring opportunities and try and take those chances when they present themselves, because we've seen that we can do it. There's been games where we scored more than one, and sometimes when it clicks, we just look like we could score all day. But there's not been that many goals in our side yet this season, and I think what we need to do is try and look for that key to actually finish our chances. And it's been one of those things where I think that there's no one really to blame. I don't think anyone's really playing poorly or, you know, missing clear-cut chances. I think we've just been exceptionally lucky in a lot of cases.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you see it from that view. And obviously it is hugely encouraging. I guess it always feels more frustrating, doesn't it, that there isn't an answer, there isn't something that you can improve on. If everybody's doing what they need to be able to do, then how do you find a way through that? For the second game in recent times, Dyche tried to go for it by bringing on Ashley Barnes to play alongside Wood. I'm not sure it worked that well again, in that I think once we did bring Barnes and Wood up front, the two of them, the chances seemed to go a little bit. I don't think we were maybe as creative as we were when we just had the 4-5-1. Do we think we have, again, looking at this as an answer to how do we get back into the game once we do go behind, do we think we have a formation of strikers with the current strikers that we have that works to have both of them on the pitch? And if so, Daniel, which ones would you choose?
I think with our three main strikers right now, I don't think there's a system that works too well. Maybe of all the combinations, Barnes and Vokes might be the best. They've had some success in the past, but really, I don't think we have the men to pull it off until maybe Wells comes in and shows that what he can do. I think he's the type of forward who can play with another striker. Vokes is definitely, you know, he plays a lot better when he has a partner. With Ings and Gray, that was blatantly obvious. So I just don't think we have the personnel to start with a 4-4-2. I think it's fine if you're chasing a game and you just need to find a target and find one of two men up front and give some defenders a bit of bother. But starting until Wells comes in and shows what he can do, or until we get another striker who's more in that Ings, Gray, smaller, more agile mold, then I don't think it's going to pan out for us.
Yeah, well, I think picking up on that point you just made there, Daniel, why do you think then, given that out of all of our current strikers, Vokes is the one that shows more natural tendencies to play with a partner, why do you think Barnes is getting the nod over Vokes when he is leaving Wood on the pitch?
I don't know. I think Vokes works as the target man. And if you've got Wood on as well, then Wood is a more natural target man than Vokes is. And I think Barnes has a bit more that he can do with his legs and with his body. So maybe that's why. That's the only thing I can think of. Barnes can occasionally just get a shot off from his feet from distance and whack it in. And there's not many examples of Vokes doing something similar. So that's maybe why. So that's all I can think of.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. James, again, Daniel picked up on the guy waiting in the wings, Wells, to see when he can get his chance. Do you think in games like this, it's time that we just threw caution to the wind and get him on and see what he can do? Or, again, why do you think Dyche is holding on to him for some reason?
I'm not sure. I think he's just waiting for the opportunity that he's really going to fit into the side. To be honest, I've been a little bit puzzled by this, you know, late switching to 4-4-2 late in some of the games, because it just doesn't really seem to offer anything more than we've had with one up front. So I've been surprised a few times to see Defoe taken off, particularly when he's looked like he's pulling all the strings in the middle to just bring on another big lad up front, and it just doesn't seem to really give us much more of an outlet. I think what would be interesting to see with Naki Wells is whether now that Brady looks like he's going to be out for quite a long time, whether he could maybe play out wide and contribute there. Because I think, you know, it's something we used to do a lot at the turf with sort of Jay Rodriguez and a few others, where we'd play a striker out wide as a more advanced sort of winger and try and use both the pace they have and obviously the finishing ability they've got to our advantage. I think it could be interesting to see if that's something that maybe Wells could do for us.
Exactly. And I think in an absolutely seamless transition there, that brings us very nicely on to the big headline of the Leicester game. And that was, of course, the serious injury to Robbie Brady that saw him leave the field on a stretcher with his leg in a brace in some extreme distress, which is incredibly sad news for Robbie and for everybody at the club. And obviously, it goes without saying that we are all keeping our fingers crossed that it isn't perhaps as serious as was first feared, and that we do get him back and playing and fit as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, it certainly doesn't look that way. Dyche himself has come out and said he's fearing that it's going to be more serious than it isn't. James, let's stick with you then. Obviously, you did mention that a moment ago with Brady's lengthy layoff. Let's stick with one specific train of thought to start off with. How much of a miss is he going to be to this current squad?
I mean, that's quite an interesting question to go to start with, because I've actually felt like these past maybe three or four games, we're starting to see what we really paid for in Robbie Brady. Even before then this season, he's sort of been a little bit in and out, a little bit hit and miss. He's been very, very much like a lot of wingers are, a little bit streaky. But I think the last couple of games, he's been exceptional all game. And the same goes for Goodmanson on the other side. And it's been really looking like we've got a really settled midfield as well as a settled defence. And there's sort of really not much to debate come match day about what the lineup's going to be. However, obviously with him now being injured in pretty unfortunate circumstances, and I don't know whether anything else has been said about it since the weekend, but I was hearing talk of, maybe it's an ACL or even a ruptured kneecap, which I think are both injuries that had, resulted in quite a lengthy time on the sidelines. We're going to have to find out now, what can we do without him? I think imminently it's probably going to mean the return of Scott Arfield to play in the midfield. And it seems strange to think someone who's been so key to our teams over the last couple of seasons, I've actually almost forgotten he plays for us. In recent weeks, we've looked that good and that settled in midfield that no one's been getting a sniff, even a sniff of opportunity to come in. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles, being thrown back in the deep end. I think that there might be a minor positive to it, is that it seems like recently Brady's sort of taken over full control of set pieces, and we seem reluctant to let anyone else have an opportunity. And I think he's been sort of almost forcing it, trying to look to score the sensational free kick from areas that it just aren't really his area to hit the ball from, and you would have maybe liked to see Defoe strike it from. So I think that, the very, very slight silver lining on the cloud is that we might see a little bit more variation in what we do with set pieces. But he's going to be a massive miss. The way he's been playing in recent weeks, I think he's really started to show that he's £13 million worth of winger. And to be, without him now is bitterly disappointing. And I think it makes a winger a big target for January.
Yeah, it really does. So let's pick up on that then, Daniel, and I'm going to come across to you. So obviously, James has talked us through, and I think we probably all very much agree with this, in just how much of a miss he's going to be in this current squad, predominantly because of how well he's been performing recently and just how well that midfield together have all been playing. So I'm going to move the question, which Bird touched on slightly then, but I'm going to put that to you. Assuming then that we're all comfortable that we are going to miss him, what do we do about it?
Well, we're how many days away from the January window? I think the board has to put their hands in the pockets if Brady's going to be out for any length of time. We're in such a fantastic position in the league, and we have to just take advantage of being in that position and get to the finish line. And I really think that there's just no one in the squad right now who is just going to slot in as naturally as at wing and deliver the performances that Robbie Brady's capable of. It's funny, last time I was on the podcast a good few weeks ago now, I was jeered from the Peanut Gallery for praising some of Robbie Brady's work, and it just goes to show in the last couple of weeks he really did turn it on. It is a huge loss, I think it is going to cause us a lot of headaches for the month of December anyway. Scott Arfield, great lad, great servant to the club, but just not up to at the level on the wing. And, you know, that might be a shout that James mentioned, bringing Wells in and playing more of a 4-3-3 like we did with Danny Ings when he first started coming in. And Jay Rodriguez did it, and Ashley Barnes has done it on an occasion. It's not actually, we've actually looked all right when we've done it on the occasions we've had to do it. So might be worth a shot if we're struggling through this month.
Yeah, I think you're right, Daniel. You know, we've got a balance here of what we do in the short term before we get to January, and then obviously what we do in January. Taking the current month first, then yeah, you're right. We're going to have to make do, and you kind of got to look at it and see what you think Dyche will do. And I kind of feel that he will try and not to disrupt the side very much. And I think if he can keep the shape of this team that's been performing as well as it has been for the rest of the month, I think we're more likely to see Scott Arfield play in a direct replacement for Brady, so that everybody else is still in that role. I do agree with you about the, like you say, if it's a lengthy layoff, we are going to have to buy another winger in January. The problem with that, of course, is the cost of them. Good wingers and good attacking wingers don't come cheap. But I want to just pick up on one of the points you did say there, Daniel, because what we will find, which I think we've never found before in a Premier League transfer window, is suddenly we are, like you say, a very attractive proposition. We've managed to keep hold of Sean Dyche, and everybody loves Sean Dyche at the moment, and players will want to work for him. And we're sitting comfortably in the table. We're only 5 wins away from safety. So I think players can come to us safe in the knowledge that if they come and sign for us, they'll get at least 18 months of Premier League football, or hopefully much more than that. So, James, I mean, I guess just as a final word on that, do you agree with that, in that we just make do up until January and then sign a new player to replace Brady in January? If so, do you think it's a purchase of another winger, or do you think we could maybe look to the loan market in January and bring in maybe a better quality better quality winger for maybe less money, so we don't have to buy another expensive winger?
I think it's difficult, and it's one really, I guess, for Dyche and the board to assess when they know the extent of Brady's injury. You know, signing a player of Brady's ability permanently is going to cost us at least what Brady cost, if not a little bit more now, because the market seems to have moved on sort of in the 12 months or so since. So you could be looking at, you know, 15 million. And then it puts you in a difficult position, I think, when Brady back, because on current form, Goodmanson looks incredible. I don't think you'd want to take him out the side. Brady obviously has played really well, but he's now out injured, and obviously he'd have to win his place back. But you're then talking about maybe having two players of that sort of quality who are fighting for one place in the side, and can you keep them both happy at the same time? I think it's difficult for a side like ours, where we do like to be really settled, to try and keep so many, you know, big players happy. And I think that's part of what's really worked in our favour with our sort of squad size we've tended to have, is that it's easier to keep people happy, because they're always sort of one player, one injury away from coming in, or you know, one suspension coming in and getting the opportunity to show what they can do. Whereas if you're sort of two or three players down the pecking order, it's obviously a lot more difficult to see where your future's coming from. But again, can you get a player of the quality of Brady on the loan market? It's difficult to say, and I think really we just have to take a look at sort of what happens over the next 2 or 3 weeks, and how whoever comes in performs, how we're performing, obviously what the prognosis is for Brady before we really make a decision. But it's going to be a difficult decision to make, because it's not the best time of year to shop in anyway, January. So it's going to be very hard to find someone who can do what Robbie Brady can do at that time of year.
Yeah, it really is. It's worrying times. Like you say, it's probably your worst nightmare, isn't it, when you've got a squad that's together as this one is, and is performing as well as it is, to lose a key player, especially when the board have outspent themselves than they ever have done. Daniel, do you have any final comments on that before we move on to the Watford preview?
Yeah, I mean, just on the cost of replacing Brady, You know, if we have to shell out 15 million quid, that's the spending level we're at now, and we should feel comfortable doing it. So I'm not worried about if we have to spend 15 million quid to sign a winger. And I'm not too worried about the problem that if you have three very good wingers when Brady's back, I think that's a very nice problem to have. I definitely don't think alone is going to be that... I mean, I was just thinking, you just think back about the success or lack of success that Burnley's had with loans in recent years. I think the last very successful loan player that we had is Jack Cork, who we had to then sign 6 years later. So I think we should just be looking to reinforce the squad at every opportunity. January is a great opportunity to reinforce the squad. There'll be players who are, you know, outperforming their team in the championship, so maybe they're not in a promotion contender, but they're an excellent player. They're always right for picking off in January, and like you said, especially because we're in such a good position, it looks like our Premier League is assured for this season. So we are an attractive proposition, and we can pay not the top wages, but we're starting to get a bit more competitive in that sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm really glad you picked up on the spending market that we're in, because we've shown, you know, the board have backed Dyche and they have been sensible, but they have built on their spending sprees, haven't they, in each transfer window, each one getting stronger and stronger. And I think it does make it a much easier sell to this board if we know that, I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but surely we're safe this season. We've got 25 points on the board, 5 wins, and we're at that magic 40 mark. So, and we're what, the first weekend of December? So, you know, the board's got to be looking at that in January and thinking that even if we've got to fork out 15 million, we should be assured of another Premier League windfall next season. So I definitely agree with that. And I think I fall more on the argument for buying a replacement and just basically having that competition on the side, because that can only make us stronger. Plus, of course, next season we're going on a European adventure, so we're going to need more players. We can rotate a squad when we're in the Europa League. So there you go.
I'll say, if anything good came out of the Leicester game, it's the just a bit of damp water on that notion.
What's that? That we're not going to get into Europe?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, Daniel. Honestly, don't be raining on my parade. I'm getting excited. I'm getting my passport ready. I want to see Berlin, Europe. I'm going to hold on to that little dream, I guess. So let's move away from the Premier League fixtures that week and take a very short break before we come to look at the next home game this weekend against Watford, to very, very briefly talk about the FA Cup third round draw, which, as we are recording on Monday night, has just taken place. I'm sorry, listeners. I would love to be enthusiastic and I would love to be all happy and excited, but I'm so disappointed with that draw. Burnley have drawn Manchester City away. Ugh. It's just, I really, really wanted, regular listeners will know this about me. Every year I want to win everything that's going. And I was really, really looking forward to a very deep FA Cup run this season, especially with our Premier League season going as well as it has. I thought this was a perfect opportunity to try and have a really deep run in the Cup and maybe, why not, chase some silverware. And unless City play their sixth team or whatever, then I think Burnley may find themselves going out of the FA Cup, especially if Dyche himself doesn't want to prioritise it. So I guess immediate reactions from both of you. James, we'll start with you. Give me your gut feeling on the FA Cup third round draw.
It just makes it a little bit easier to concentrate on the league, I think, doesn't it?
But we don't need to concentrate on the league. This is my point. Surely we've got to be more excited about a cup run. If we were in, say, Palace's position and we were really struggling and we were in the bottom three, then absolutely I'd feel, yeah, send the squad players out there and it doesn't matter. We don't need to concentrate on the league. We're going to be
maybe,
safe.
Maybe
are you not?
Maybe if we'd drawn Palace, I'd take that view.
Can you see as well?
I mean, yes, because anything can happen on any given day. You know, we've beat people in the past, but it's going to be a big ask. The way City are playing, they look incredible this season. And you know, I'm sure they'll change the side up a little bit. They'll probably play a few of the kids, but it's still going to be incredibly difficult for us to go there and come away with a result. I think it's really the worst possible draw we could have had. You know, when you consider all the teams that are in the draw at the third round stage, it's pretty unlucky to draw the top form team in the country for the third round. I just think it'll be very difficult. I'd love to be wrong and see us, you know, go there and get something. And I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility. But I think, you know, being realistic, it's one that's probably not going to be for us this season, unfortunately. And it gives us the opportunity to use those weekends when we could have been playing in the FA Cup. And we won't end up having a fixture to rest the players and, you know, make sure that injuries can't hurt our small squad. Because if we had a gap like that at the moment, we might have been talking about Matt Lawton not having missed a game at all. And, you know, considering the player he's been so far this season, I think you'd like those sort of opportunities just to give players with niggles a little rest.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I don't think Pep, you know, you say the City might play a couple of kids. I think if they do, it will be a couple of kids, like literally two. Pep is going to take this very seriously. I think he always took the Copa del Rey in Spain very seriously and won many doubles and triples at Barcelona. So he's definitely going to want that domestic double and will play a strong side. And yeah, like you said, anything can happen, but this City side is something very special, and they've taken us once already this season, and I wouldn't put money against them doing it again.
Well, I'm really glad I brought this up with you too. You completely barrel of laughs about it. Yeah, I was hoping one of you would cheer me up and say, "No, it's a great draw. We're going to beat them, and we'll have got the worst possible draw out of the way in the third round, and we've got an easy ride to the final." But I do suspect you're both right. I will say
the only positive thing to that is that it's a sign of the respect that I think Pep has for Burnley that he will play a strong side, and our successful cup runs, the League Cup in 2009 or 2008, whatever it was, that's when Burnley were just an unknown quantity, and these Premier League sides just didn't know who we were, didn't know how we played, and we caught them off guard. And we are now a known quantity, and Pep Guardiola knows exactly what Burnley's about. He's seen us play, he's beat us, and I think he will show us a decent level of respect. So that's one positive to take, is there's the best coach in the world takes Burnley very, very seriously and will play a strong side against us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't know how many people have seen it, but there was quite an interesting clip circulating Twitter this week from Robinson, who was in a panel at one of the games and was basically saying that after the game last season, when obviously he was still with this side, Pep had come into the dressing room after the game and had told Sean Dyche that he was the first manager in his career who he didn't know how to play against. He said, I didn't know how to play back at you. And I think that's a huge compliment to Sean Dyche. And like you say, you know, it's a testament to how well we've progressed in the last couple of years that we're having sides of this City side, you know, take us so seriously. So let's leave that disappointment there. And I'll have my FA Cup dreams just shelved for another season until next season when we play in the Europa League. And let's move on to Watford, which is the game this weekend, which is actually at the moment very much looking like a battle for seventh place. James, what do you expect from the game on Saturday? Do you think it's going to be a good battle? Do you think it's going to be maybe a good challenge? What are your views?
I think it's going to be a tough fixture. I think Watford have played really well so far this season. They've maybe outperformed some people's expectations. They've had some very good results. It's going to be interesting, I think, to see what happens. You know, they're in a similar position, a team that at the beginning of the season people were probably thinking it'd be, bottom half. Probably in their case, people probably expected a little bit higher than they expected from us. But we've been the two surprise packages, I'd say, probably from the start of the season. We've both got into December looking really strong in the top 10. We're still you know, 5 points clear of ninth, even after, you know, defeat at Leicester, which I think if you'd been told that at the beginning of the season, you would have probably not believed it. So to be seeing it as a game that's a battle for seventh, potentially in our case, even a battle for us to get back above Tottenham into sixth, it's just incredible. Obviously, they're a team who've spent a lot of money. I don't think they've necessarily seen the full benefits of what they've spent so far. Obviously, Andre Gray, we all know quite well, he's not quite scored the number of goals you might have expected. He's not necessarily played a lot of football. But I think that also shows the difference between the two clubs. The fact they were able to go and spend 18 million on Andre and not necessarily start him every game just shows that, you know, they've got quite a bit of money and they're happy to spend quite a bit of money, where we still, even though we have now started spending some serious money that a lot of Burnley fans probably never dreamed we'd spend, we've still shown for the most part what we bring in is sort of first choice material, and we don't spend sort of 18 million on people who we're going to place on the bench for, you know, half of our games. I'm expecting a battle. It's going to be interesting. It's one back at the turf, and I think it's a good opportunity to get a good win on the back of a disappointing game at the turf last time, where I think we deserve something from it, and obviously we're robbed late on, and potentially as well that the crowd might be really up for it, having seen that game last at the turf. So it's going to be an interesting one, and I'm looking forward to being there and seeing it. It should be a good game.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the game on Saturday. I think it's, like you say, I think Watford were perhaps tipped for greater things than us this season, especially with some of the signing, and when they took Andre off us, don't forget, as well. And actually going into this game, we're sitting above them in the league. Yeah, it's close, but, you know, we're doing better than they are this season. Daniel, final thoughts from you on the Watford game on Saturday. What are you expecting?
Narratives. I think this is a great one. I think this is a great one for the fans of the football narrative. You've got Dyche, who was spurned by Watford to the chagrin of many fans. He's still very much loved there. A lot of Watford fans still upset that the board ditched Dyche when they did, and they've had a managerial roller coaster since then that's only just now seems to be settled. And then you have, on the return of Andre to Turf Moor and the reception he'll get. I don't think he'll get a good one. He was a very good player for us, but I don't think he ever fell into that real beloved category. And I think whenever a player moves for a similar level club, fans always take that as sort of a slight. If they move on to a much bigger club, then I think no fans really quibble with that. But I feel like there's just a couple of nice little storylines. Will Andre score? Will Dyche get a good win over Watford? I think it'll be a fun game. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be entertaining. Two teams that play good football, about the same level in the league. I think they're, like you said, they're about the closest to us in terms of another club, and I think it'll be a real battle.
Indeed, and I cannot think of a better place to end this week's podcast. A game of narratives. That's what we're all expecting at Turf Moor on Saturday, and I cannot wait. That's all from us this week. We will be back after the Watford game with our summary of what did happen in that game of narratives. Thanks again to James and to Daniel for joining me this evening and for putting their thoughts together to this podcast. And thanks to Adam, our producer, who will be editing this week's show. But thanks as ever to you, the listener, for downloading and listening this week. We would not be here without you, so your support is very, very much appreciated. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Ever podcast. Until next time.
This time last year.
It is. Well, I've definitely been Lowton's most critical, harsh critic, sorry, on this podcast. But I have to say, I wouldn't go as far as to say I've been completely disgusted with him. And there have been some games where he has played all right, and I have given him credit where credit's due. Now, looking at it, and we've called out for maybe Flanagan to come in and see what he's made of, Lawton is the best right back option that we have at the club. So unless we're going to spend a lot of money on a replacement, he has to play, and he has to play every single week. And we're going to have to accept that there are going to be some games where he's a bit poor, and sometimes against certain teams in this league that he's going to get caught for pace, or he's going to get caught out of position.